Hello, I'm Pastor Rod Holler of the Cape Baptist Church in Cape Coral, Florida. I hope this message will be a blessing to you. Thanks for listening.
Preparing for battle. The sorry chapter in Israel's history where the king has been driven out of his capital, Jerusalem, and his son has amassed an army against him. David has journeyed, fleeing for his literal life, from Jerusalem toward and across the Jordan River, settling in Mahanaim. Simultaneous action, David had sent Hushai back to thwart, to defeat the counsel of Ahithophel. It works. The man is able to penetrate the inner circle of Absalom. He confounds the council, the war council of Absalom, to take 12,000 men, pursue David immediately, kill him, and the rebellion will end with David's death. Well, that's been stopped. The message gets to David, albeit it was not an exact message, and Ahithophel. Remember this? Ahithophel, the counselor of David, is Bathsheba's grandfather. That's why he gave the perverted counsel to take the concubines on top of the palace. When he saw that his counsel was not obeyed, what did he do? He went back to his home, got his house in order, and very methodically prepared the end of his life and hung himself. Sad to say, this man who once was like talking to an oracle of God couldn't even give himself good counsel. David crossed the Jordan River, and there was, as he's on the other side, apparently three very wealthy men came with incredible supplies to David. Shobai, Machir, and Barzillai. Shobai being of the children of Ammon, enemies of Israel. But they have some that come to David and realize Israel has the truth. Shobai is one of those men, and he's behind David. Machir. Who's Machir? Bathsheba's brother. Still brings food and gifts to David. Her grandfather was so angry, he hung himself. Her brother brings food to David in the presence of his enemies. If you remember, Absalom was not far away with a massive army. We also considered, as the list of gifts were brought and all therein, what was missing? Weapons and soldiers. Because God did not need them. David did not need them. God was going to fight the battle for him. Well, we're going to continue on. Now we're in chapter 18. The big picture look at 2 Samuel 18. In verses 1 to 8, David organizes his forces, divides them into thirds in preparation for battle against Absalom. Verses 9 to 18, Absalom is hung by his head and hair in a tree. The donkey walks away from underneath him and he's hanging there, and Joab comes and kills him. In verses 19 to 30, Ahimaaz, a messenger, gives an incomplete report to David about the battle and the death of Absalom. Verses 31 and 32, a Cushite reports Absalom's death. And in verse 33, David mourns for his son. Well, we're going to focus tonight on verses 1 to 4. Let us read, please. And David numbered the people that were with him, and set captains of thousands and captains of hundreds over them. And David sent forth a third part of the people under the hand of Joab, and a third part under the hand of Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, Joab's brother, and a third part under the hand of Ittai the Gittite. And the king said unto the people, I will surely go forth with you myself also. But the people answered, Thou shalt not go forth, for if we flee away, they will not care for us. Neither, if half of us die, they will care for us. But now thou art worth 10,000 of us. Therefore now it is better that thou succor us out of the city. And the king said unto them, What seemeth you best I will do. And the king stood by the gate side, and all the people came out by hundreds and by thousands. Well, our simple study tonight, David organizing his army into thirds, the importance of David and the people advancing into battle. Verse 1, David numbered the people that were with him and set captains of thousands and captains of hundreds over them. Let's stop and reflect for a minute. We have considered that the rebellion of Absalom obviously was not announced. It was sprung upon him. And he had to flee for his life. And we have studied now for several chapters his exodus from the city to Mahanaim and all the events therein. But how many people were there? We don't know exactly, but we do get some hints from this passage, this chapter. I find it especially interesting when we think about how many people are with him that we reflect that he crossed the Jordan at night. Let's think about that. If it's one or two guys, they swim across, they're done. Move a lot of people, it becomes a project, especially with people that are not in good health, people up in years, people young in years. It seems that there were multiple thousand people with him. First of all, people on the east side of Jordan would probably come to him, adding to his ranks. That's a believable thought. We also have to think, if his army is very small, why would he divide it into thirds? He may do well because considering the massive army that Absalom has amassed, remember, from all Israel, as Hushai had counseled, it took time to amass that army, and surely it was a massive army. So it suggests that there were a lot of people. Why did he need three special leaders? Why could not he manage it himself? Because it was much too large. Think about 2, verse 3. But the people answered, Thou shalt not go forth, for if we flee away, they will not care for us. Neither if half of us die, will they care for us. But now thou art worth 10,000 of us. Did he have 10,000? I don't know. I do believe, though, it was a very, very significant number of men that he had with him. Quote, David's prospect of his victory, whereof he was so confident that he giveth charge to his army not to kill Absalom, but take him as prisoner. Though victory doth not indeed depend upon the multitude of the army, yet David knew well not to tempt the Lord and to expect a conquest by a miracle. Now the point is obviously that's getting a little ahead about Absalom, but I do want you to get the point. David is taking military action. He is a man of war, which Absalom is not. And he is aligning these armies. He understands battle. Remember, he fled for his life. In my estimation, although the scripture doesn't tell us, I believe it was about 13 years. We know that he was a youth when he killed Goliath, and we know that he was 30 years old when he took the throne. I estimate around 13 years he learned how to evade, especially when King Saul amassed his chosen warriors to capture David, and they couldn't do it. Now David is putting his people in order, and he is not just saying, well, God, you fight the battle completely. Folks, we know that in this world, God will do for us, but he expects us to do our part. This is where David is. Let's get these people in order. I want you to reflect. Maybe some of you know this, maybe some of you this is new. At the end of chapter 24, there's a disjointed story. At the end of 2 Samuel chapter 24, there is this story of David hanging out there. We don't know exactly where it fits in the time frame. So all we can do is really take it and glean from it truths. I'm certainly not going to consider this tonight, other than to say In chapter 24, he numbered the people and got in trouble. Chapter 24, verse 21, "And again the anger of the Lord was kindled against David, and he moved David against them to say, 'Go, number Israel and Judah.'" In verse 10, "And David's heart smote him after that he had numbered the people. And David said unto the Lord, 'I have sinned greatly in what I have done. And now I beseech thee, O Lord, take away the iniquity of thy servant, for I have done very foolishly.'" So here in chapter 18, he very wisely and methodically numbers the people, puts them into ranks by thousands and hundreds, and he leads on to victory. Chapter 24, he numbered the people. We'll get there, but the bottom line is God punished him greatly. There is a difference. In chapter 18, David needs to organize his men to go to battle. In chapter 24, David's kingdom has grown, and he just wants to see how big we are. "Look how many people I have." And God said, "David, it's your pride." And he suffered greatly for it. Therefore, what do we glean from that? Sometimes it's okay to number the people. Sometimes it's not okay to number the people. Sometimes it's okay to do this. Sometimes it's not okay to do that. Folks, that's the reality of life. Everything in its place, everything in its time. David's understanding was, well, why could I number them back here, but I can't number them now? Because your attitude's wrong. You're puffed up with pride. And so it is sometimes you may be told no to something. Well, why was it okay here, but it's not okay here? Well, that's how David was. It was okay here, but it's not okay there. Well, we know this. David has numbered the people, and he has a lot of people. In 1 Samuel 22:2, David has been a fugitive now, and he begins slowly, because the fugitive time of David's life was of great training, to be able to be a warrior, to be able to lead people. And God brought to him 400 men to begin his training. Now, we wouldn't think the best way to train somebody is to stick them out in the woods and go run for your life. Add on top of that, 400 men. And it tells us, everyone that was in distress, everyone that was in debt, and everyone that was discontented came to David. Gee, thanks, Lord. Gee, thanks. And God started working with David so long ago as a fugitive, as a leader of these unhappy people. And God developed him, and God developed him, and God developed him. Do you want to see the big picture? David did very, very well under persecution. When David was given prosperity and peace, guess what? He got into trouble. He was his best when life wasn't good, if you will. Now David's army is amassed into several thousand. Verse 2, "And David sent forth a third part of the people under the hand of Joab, and a third part under the hand of Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, Joab's brother, and a third part under the hand of Ittai the Gittite. And the king said to the people, 'I will surely go forth with you myself also.'" Let's first of all look at the three leaders that he put over the three divisions over Israel. Joab, then Abishai. Both of them are David's nephews and their brothers. And then this Ittai, the Gittite. It's interesting to think Joab used to be the head of the whole army. And now he's over a third of the army. Joab is what we would call a loose cannon. Joab is the one that rebuked David because of the way he treated Abner. Abner, of course, was of the house of Saul. There was civil war, and David was decent and kind to Abner, and Joab thought that's not the way to handle it. He needs to die, and Joab saw to it he was dead. Joab manipulated in chapter 14 of 2 Samuel to get David to bring Absalom back to Jerusalem. If you remember, he sent the woman of Tekoa with a made-up story. And David said to her after he heard the story, you know, it sounds like Joab's behind all this. Well, obviously, Joab's plan worked. He brought back Absalom, and guess what? There's civil war. Joab has been demoted from over all the army to a lesser place. He's in one-third. Abishai, David's nephew, is over a third of the army. He has issues in his past. When King Saul, while David was a fugitive, Abishai was with him, and King Saul is sleeping in the valley. And Abishai says, let me smite him to the ground. I'll kill him right now. No, no, Abishai, that's not how we work. Don't do that. Abishai was with Joab when he killed Abner. If you remember, just back in chapter 16, when Shimei of the house of Saul was casting dust and stones at David and cursing at him, Abishai said, let me cut his head off. No, Abishai. Now maybe this sort of behavior is necessary in battle. Then we have Ittai. 2 Samuel chapter 15, verse 18. And all his servants passed on beside him. This is as they're fleeing from Jerusalem, from Absalom. All of his, David's servants, passed on beside him, and all the Cherethites, and all the Pelethites, and all the Gittites. If you are a Gittite, you are from the town of Gath. Know anybody else who's from Gath? Guy by the name of Goliath? And these people of the town of Gath are Philistines, the bitter enemies of Israel. And there's a whole contingent. Chapter 15, verse 18, 600 men which came after him from Gath. This is the entourage that he has. He even has trusted a Philistine to take a third of his army into battle. Joab was rebellious. Abishai was rebellious. Ittai was a foreigner of an age-old enemy of Israel. How could David use these men? Remember his condition. I took Bathsheba in adultery and I murdered her husband. I think I've learned to kind of maybe be a little merciful on people. If God can still use me as the king. Sometimes maybe we need to be kicked in life a little bit to appreciate what other people go through. Maybe it makes us a little more compassionate. David was forgiven of much. Did he swing the pendulum too far? Maybe. David had to answer for that. But God said, you're still my man, and I promised you an eternal kingdom through your son of David, Jesus Christ. It is wise that we remember other people and consider ourselves. I want you to think about this, that David is determined to go to battle. At the end of verse 2, and the king said unto the people, I will surely go forth with you myself also. Now wait a minute. Think about this. He's got the armies divided by three. And the truth is, if he gets killed, he knows his son is aiming for him. If he's killed, the rebellion's all over. There's no point in fighting anymore. And he says, I will go to battle. Do you remember we studied? He is now stationed at the town of Mahanaim on the east side of Jordan. And Mahanaim is in the extreme close proximity of a town called Rabbah. 2 Samuel chapter 11, verse 1. It came to pass, after the year was expired, at the time when the kings go forth to battle, that David said to Joab and his servants with him and all Israel, and they destroyed the children of Ammon and besieged Rabbah. But David tarried still at Jerusalem and took Bathsheba. I should have been in the battle. And so here he is now at Mahanaim in the very close proximity to Rabbah. What does he do? I'm going to battle. I'm not going to goof again. I'm going to go where I belong. Verse 3, but the people answered, thou shalt not go forth, for if we flee away, they will not care for us. Neither if half of us die will they care for us, but now thou art worth 10,000 of us. Now therefore it's better that thou succor us out of the city. And the king said to them, what seemeth you best I will do. I believe honestly David truly knew that everybody on Absalom's field was going to be looking for him. And it would be, for all practical earthly thinking, it would be suicide for me to go out there. But I think David is probably torn because he's near Rabbah and it's got to be fresh in his mind. I should have been here years ago. And yet, the people talked to him and he agreed. I do think David is such a broken man. That's how he could look at his nephews and their messes that they did. Look what I did. Quote, the army's refusal of his royal offer, which they did not out of any contempt for the king to cross his kingly power and pleasure, but out of the highest veneration to his royal person, which made them so careful and conscientious for his personal preservation that they grounded their laudable refusal of his offer upon solid reasons. We can't let you go. He would be the marked man that the rebels would aim at. The slaughter of David would rejoice them more than the slaughter of 10,000 of his subjects. David, you can't go. The dignity of David. He's the king. But if thou be kept alive, though the rebels rout us, yet mayest thou recruit a new and another army and so disappoint them from the accomplishing their design. The people looked at David. God's hand was on this man. Even when he sinned, and if I can use the expression, God's hand was on him heavier than ever before in a sense of chastisement. And if God chooses him, it was for the people to recognize him. Was he a sinner? He was a terrible sinner. But the people that were with David realized who he was and what he was. If you're killed, it's all over. You can't go out there. I see here the great teaching of realizing that God does use people and He controls them. God is in control, even of human authority. Human authority is God's idea. He is the one that has established it. Consider Romans 13:1. Let every soul be subject to the higher power. For there is no power but of God. The powers that be are ordained of God. That's true today. That was written while ungodly Rome was in power. That nation that persecuted Christians. And Paul wrote, there is no power but of God. The powers that be are ordained of God. Why God does what God does is up to Him. It's up to us for He accept it. And God does work through human authority. Proverbs 21:1, the king's heart, his innermost thinking and convictions, is in the hand of the Lord. As the rivers of water, He turneth it whithersoever He will. The mighty river will rush, and it's turned by the banks of the river. Wherever that bank says to go, the water goes. And God takes and literally turns the thinking and hence the behavior of the king. So it is these people respect David for who he is. Let us consider some words of admonition for us today. 1 Peter 2:17. Concerning the government, I want you to look at the end of the verse. Honor the king. We don't have a king, but the concept is honor the government. How about your master bosses? Colossians 3:22, servants, obey in all things your masters according to the flesh, not with eye servants, as men pleasers, but in singleness of heart, fearing God. You must be crazy. When that was written, servants, that word usually means slaves. Parents, children, honor thy father and mother. How about church leaders? 1 Timothy 5:17, let the elders that rule well be counted worthy of double honor, especially they who labor in the word and doctrine. God has ordained human authority. It's His plan that we would submit. David has paid a dear price for his sin and is still paying a dear price. It is ever present on his mind, the words of Nathan, when Nathan rebuked him in chapter 12 of 2 Samuel, the sword will never leave your house. And David now realizes that the nation is poised in civil war and battle. People are going to die. And it's ever present. It's my fault. It's my fault. It's my fault. It would almost be merciful to die rather than to live through what he is living through. To see his daughter raped by her stepbrother. To see Absalom murder his stepbrother. To see the nation split. It would have probably been easier, Lord, just take me. David has assembled his army for battle. We have seen him divide, prepare, and he's not the sort of guy now to run out against Goliath. They said, don't go, and he said, okay, I won't go. He's a broken man. But is this not the reality of our world? When we look at a battlefield, is it really man against man? Or is it the powers of evil that have provoked this behavior? We need to see this world for what it truly is. Yes, it is sinner interacting with sinner. But the truth is, Ephesians 6:12, for we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. Do you understand what the real world is? This is why when we start to fight the human battle with human tools, we miss the whole point. The battle is spiritual, therefore we must put on our spiritual armor. That's how you fight. Our battle and our armor is spiritual. We must see the real battle and conduct ourselves accordingly. God ordains human authority. Did you know that all human authority is faulty? But yet God chooses to work through the authority to do His perfect will. When we appreciate that we wrestle not against flesh and blood, then we're on our way to a correct understanding of this world.
This is Pastor Rod Holler. I pray you enjoyed that message. Thanks for listening.